From courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 378. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host is Derek, but you know him in the forum as Deeper3, and he is Deeper384 on Twitter.
No, happy to be here again. Busy week for us, gaming-wise.
Several sessions, yes.
Several sessions. We got Parsec working again, some really fun NBA Live 10 games against each other, some cool concepts that we tried, even booted up NBA Live 96, played a game there, and some 2K server love, which is wild. NBA Playgrounds 2, we actually got three games in, and yes, we did win all of them. We played on the same team, and yeah, we were able to boot up Playgrounds 2 and have some fun with that. So it's been a good week.
And it's great to get back to that, because we were missing it. We mentioned that last week that we'd been experiencing some problems with Parsec. All of a sudden, out of the blue, we figured that it was the new setting about maximum quality, higher maximum quality, that it was coming through great picture for me, but now it was coming through with a much lower frame rate and chunking along. I have to give you all the credit here. You just went wild with the settings, just messing around with them, and we found some that work. So unfortunately, we didn't hear back from Parsec, I don't think, but we fixed it, or rather, you fixed it.
Yeah, I jacked up the bandwidth to 50 Mbps and the FPS to 240, and that's what did the trick. I can't believe it. I do have a good internet connection, but it took maxing out all the possible settings in Parsec to get not only you to keep that great picture, but also to cut down on your lag tremendously so the games are playable. So it definitely worked out. Another game, too, that we booted up was NBA 2K11, the 91-92 roster. What a great mod that is.
Fantastic.
The courts, the jerseys.
I love those retro season rosters. I've made some of them myself over the years, as I've said before, some of my favorite projects to make. I always seem to default to the 96 season for probably pretty obvious reasons, actually. But just so much work and love goes into them. And obviously they have their limitations, but they come out so great. And look, you know, we're playing the 2K11, and of course some of the commentary is referencing the 2010 season. There's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing you can do about players that don't have names in the game that are being referred to as number one or number 42 or whatever. That's always been the way with modding. You know that there's limitations to what we can do, but the overall presentation is so great that this is why we love the retro season mods, like the ones they're making for 2K19, that multiple seasons now Stildo and company have made. Just so impressive and so fun to play with that. I mean, we did have some problems with the input lag. We're still trying to work out some things there, and hopefully we will be able to get to the bottom of that. But if nothing else, just to mess around with. When it was working, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, the audiophile thing with the names, too. A lot of times the game in the modders figured it out how to get around that, and most of the audio is correct for, you know, the common names are in the game, right? So if there's a Jones that played back then and there's a Jones today, that back then Jones can have them say Jones, you know, when he catches, when they say passes it to Jones or whatever. So most of the time the audio can be figured out, which is nice. As far as like referencing past seasons, the 2010 or 2011 season, when you're playing a 91-92 roster, they don't do it that often, so it doesn't ruin the experience. Plus you're so, you know, distracted by the accuracy of the on-court stuff in the arena stuff, like the jerseys, the floor, the Dornas, sometimes the baskets themselves, the crowd, all of that stuff. So yeah, it's wild what we can do from a modding perspective on PC. And I still think that most console gamers, the large majority, don't even know about it. They don't know what we're able to do, the extent of modding, etc. But yeah, we had some wild games. We had a game on NBA Live 10 where you hit a three in the corner with Michael Redd. It was the Bucks versus the Thunder, and it left about, 3 seconds on the clock?
About 3 seconds, yeah. Maybe less. It was definitely. I didn't leave you with much time, but enough time, as it turned out.
Yeah, enough time, and I was able to cut to the ball pass it into Kevin Durant and hit a game winner. That was super fun. Like, it was just a really fun game. I got killed by Joe Alexander in the game, Jumping Joe. Game legend, Joe.
I don't even know if that's his name. I've just assigned it to him. I think it works, Jumpin' Joe.
Well, I was looking it up, and it is? He had some of the best. Well, no, but it makes sense. So I was looking it up, and Joe was, for the combine, had like the second highest scores on things like bench press, vertical, stuff like that. And vertical was one of them. Like, he was a hell of an athlete. So Joe actually makes sense, because apparently he could jump out of the gym and was a super athlete, but he could just never put it together. But as the article that I actually sent to you, his career overseas has been outstanding. Ever since he left the NBA, he spent a little bit of time in the D League at the time. Now it's a G League. But he's had a great career overseas, including, I believe, a championship or two. I think he was like co-MVP one year, stuff like that. So good for him. And he says he loves the what's going on overseas, and it's been basically fulfilling his dream. So that's a good story about Joe Alexander. But, you know, then we had another game where you absolutely, and I know you wanted to touch on this, where you blew me out. And it was with the Rockets, and I was using the Mavericks. And what a weird game that was.
I mean, you were getting screwed over left and right with Dirk. You were going to the go-to move, his classic fadeaway. And, yeah, I mean, you made some, but it was just clanking off the rim, which was just, yeah, just very unfair, to be honest. I'll absolutely give you that. I was driving with some very cheesy driving with Trevor Ariza, Tracy McGrady, even Luis Scola was getting in there, mixing it up inside. Bit of blocking from Yao, bit of inside work from Yao as well. I did break out to a big lead late in the fourth, and I did take my foot off the pedal a bit, as you've done for me a couple of times before as well, because, I mean, that's part of the sportsmanship I like about our games, that we both respect each other, we're friends, obviously, we love basketball, we love the competition, and you get to that point where I'm not going to run up the score. You know, it was a minute left, I was up by, 16, 18, so I was just going to wind the clock down a little bit and just take a few crazy shots. I think I took a three with Yao at one point and clanged off the rim. Doesn't have the high rating in 10 as he did in 2003. For whatever reason, that was wrong for Live 2003 as well. But I do enjoy that sportsmanship that we have with the gaming sessions.
Yeah, Yao with his Andrew Bynum moment with the pull up from three from the top of the key.
There's
nothing I could do in that game. As we had talked about before this call, I took really good shots with Dirk. I had a huge height advantage. I'm shooting his signature 1 foot fadeaways and even getting wide open threes and missing them. And meanwhile, Tracy McGrady goes flashback to 02, but also a juiced up version of that. And he's just throwing it down on me left and right. So, and I appreciate that about the sportsmanship aspect of our games as well. And I wish there was more of that, because you play online and you see how toxic the community is.
I've had games of Pro-Am where, or the rec, where I've been down to the last person. It's now just me versus the five people, basically. And they're triple-teaming me in the backcourt, so I can't even bring the ball up. And it's like, you know, guys, you've won the game. You're ahead. My teammates have rage quit. At least let's just play the sportsmanlike. But they're full court pressing with a couple of minutes left, and they're up by 20 or 30. I know competition, win at all costs, whatever. But that stuff, it is toxic. You know, if you did that in the NBA, or certainly back in the old days, you know, people might be throwing some bows. There'd be some elbows. There'd be some argy-bargy pushing and shoving and maybe a couple of punches thrown if you were trying to run up the score like that.
Right, if I played like that, you wouldn't even want to play with me, and vice versa. So
yeah,
that's the thing. And then we had a great fantasy matchup, which was super fun, and this was actually your idea this time. And it was basically any video game legends that we could find, people that in the past who were role players, but they excelled and maybe had huge games for us and stuff. So, like, my team was and you're uploading these highlights to your YouTube as well, to the NLSC. But my players were like guys like Kirk Heinrich, Troy Murphy, the Wilt Chamberlain-esque Hashim to beat, who ended up playing a pivotal role in that game, including a game winner. You know, Vladimir Radmanovich, J.J. Barea, J.R. Smith, etc. And you might as well go over your lineup as well that you had, but boy, that was a fun game.
Oh, it was fantastic. I'm so glad that that worked out, that concept, because I thought, you know, we're getting some players that are rated under 70 overall in the lineups, but they do play a little bit better when, especially the likes of Jumpin' Joe Alexander, who was one of my legends, Travis Outlaw, who was a legend from a game we played, Thunder versus, it wasn't Thunder versus Bucks, it was Blazers versus, who were you in that game, Blazers, when I was the Blazers?
The Blazers game was, oh my god, I can't think of it. We played so many games. Like, I can't even think of who it is. But yeah, you killed me with Travis Outlaw, I know that.
But unfortunately, he didn't get the win in that one. Kind of wilted in the second half, but he became a legend for me, so he's in there. Rajah Bell was in there and hit another clutch shot for me as well, which kind of missing at first. Then he came alive in the second half and showed why he was the clutch player in that Bobcats Warriors game that we had. And funnily enough, I was wearing the Warriors gold standard jerseys at that time, and you the Pistons jerseys. So who else do I have? I had Josh Boone, who was a forum meme for a while there. He was a forum favorite, so I got him. With that, I got Tyson Chandler, Boris Diaw, Sir Charles Diaw, the way he was playing like Charles Barkley in there. So he was one of my guys. Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks went off in that Rockets game as well, the Rockets-Mavericks game. As much as Ariza was scoring for me and T-Mac and so forth, Brooks just started hitting threes like Steph Curry, managed to hit a great step-back three with him. Felt like a nice play, especially when it just rolled in. Lucky rim, kind rim on that one. But I blew that game. You made a great final play with the beat there. Once again, people will be able to see the highlights on the YouTube channel by the time this is out. You know what I did? As much as you and I criticize the modern game, that's exactly what I did. Is it not? I did exactly the modern game and blew that game. I did the modern NBA and blew
you
that
kicked
game.
It out. You kicked it out to a wide-open Boris Diaw for three when you probably should have gone to the basket or take like a mid-range pull up. And then the play before that, actually, you went up inside, heavily contested by Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, Hashim Tabeet. And you missed a shot from 2 feet with Tyson Chandler. And that probably wasn't your best move either, because he didn't really do anything all game. So no. It was a weird ending to the game, for you, but it worked out for me. I was debating on going to either Troy Murphy for the game winner or Tabeet, but I figured the goal, get as close to the basket with your guy who's almost like 7'5". I want to say Tabeet is 7'3" or 7'5", roughly around there, and just go up. And it actually ended up working out. But it was a cool concept, and I don't know. I miss those types of matchups.
It's a lot of fun. And I will say that it wouldn't have been as bad if I hadn't shot that early in the shot clock. I mean, it wasn't a great play, but if at least would have gone to overtime, it wouldn't have blown it. But I gave you enough time for the inbound of the beat, so it was a total failure, a total coaching failure on my part, I have to say. I should have gone with Brooks. He had the hot hand. I don't know why I thought, well, you know, find the open man. So, yeah, that was definitely my mistake there, and you capitalized big time. But yeah, such a great game, such a great. Here I am tooting my own horn. What a great idea, Andrew. But I'm so glad it worked out, and that's why we're looking to do some more of these fantasy ideas for 10 and some other games as well, other basketball games as well. Because, it's one of those things, you know, you get online, you do the online team play, and I've done a lot of that, and it's fun. But just straight-up exhibition games where you set up a fun scenario with a friend and play, it's very old-school. It's an old-school idea. But how much fun are we having with it? So much fun.
It would be a little bit more fun, though, if we could both start a season and the game doesn't allow it and choose our own team and then play against each other for the season. Mm. Like, I would have been way more excited about that instead of playing, like, exhibition every time. Exhibition is fantastic, and I love these quick games. I love being able to share the highlights. But it would have been cool to play against each other for a season.
Well, we could do a series. We're using exhibition mode, but we could do a series and like have a best of seven and put that up there.
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's not the same as tracking stats on possibly doing trades if you need to, signing players, progressing through a season, and then, you know, getting to the playoffs and both of us trying to fight through our conferences and face each other in the finals. Like, that that would have been awesome.
True.
And I would have done that. And we could have even done it for 5-minute quarters. I wouldn't have cared. Normally I do 12-minute, but for our case and our time, that would have been fun. But it's a shame that Live 10 didn't allow that. You know, that it doesn't have that flexibility. Now, we still have options where we could play co-op against the computer for an entire season, or one of us could be our opponents and have, like, two separate season saves. Mm. We could do something like that. Yeah, maybe we can entertain that. But,
There's a playoffs mode there. So
there is, but again, that's not the... Yeah, we could try that. We could dabble in that. I mean, I think people would like that content.
Yeah, it'd be fun for us. And we've said it before, is that content should be driven by fun. I mean, there's obviously people that are heavily monetizing their content and they're making thousands of dollars and making their living playing it, and more power to you if you can get that big to do that. But our content is very much driven by what we're enjoying and our passion for basketball gaming. And when we find these scenarios, that's where our content's coming from lately. And it's great. And I really appreciate you putting the videos together, because you're really spearheading that at the moment. And of course, another top 10 came out this week, and some fun plays in there.
Yeah, people like watching other people have fun.
Yep.
Right.
Definitely.
The best influencers, the best people that do that are kind of eccentric. They're out there. They have really fun personalities, right?
Sure.
Etc. So people like to watch people having fun, and I think that stands out in our gameplay videos. Top 10 came out this week. We had a lot of submissions. People were super excited about it when you posted it. Excuse me, when I posted it on Twitter and you shared it. And, you know, we got a whole wide range of games in that top 10. We have Double Dribble as the 10th highlight. We got Fox Sports, NBA Basketball 2000, which made the top 10 even at number 4, with a chase down block and then a posterizing dunk with Penny Hardaway on the Suns. We got NBA 2K21. We got 2K19, Live 16, Live 19, etc. It's at 2K11. It's so cool to see all the highlights from different games and to get all of those submissions and whatnot. So thank you all who submitted highlights, and we're looking for more. So
yeah, please
if you ever
coming.
Have any highlights,
yeah.
Shoot us highlights either on the NLSC or to me or Andrew on Twitter or to the NLSC handle, etc., because we'd love to see them. But, you know, another thing that I wanted to bring up again is we played Playgrounds 2, and that is just so much more fun as a co-op experience. And we got to use my roster. I was able to put Jordan on the floor, and you used Stackhouse, who thought he was better than Jordan when they were on the Wizards, which he was not. But, you know, we were able to play on the same team, and we were able to produce some nice, fun highlights and a blowout win that we had over the computer, and it worked really well. So that was good, too.
It really emphasized something that you've said before as we've discussed the game. And one of the recurring points that we've both talked about before is how much more fun it is as a two-player game. I've enjoyed it. I've had fun with it to a certain extent as playing solo against the CPU and playing through a season or playing through the challenges. It can be played that way, but it definitely has some cheap AI. It's definitely very repetitive. There's not as much depth to it as, say, an On Fire edition with the road trip mode, NBA Jam On Fire edition, that is. So to actually play it, again, with a friend, either co-op or competitive, and we've been playing co-op, although I think we don't have any lag. We could play competitive, but I think it's more fun to play co-op because we do play a lot of competitive stuff with 10 and other games. So it's great to have a co-op option there as well.
Yeah, there's something to be said about working together towards one common goal.
Definitely.
And obviously that's to win and to make great plays and everything. And, you know, when you're playing the computer, you can't really choose when, you know, like, let's say you wanted to control just your player. It's not the same as far as, like, making the other player go up for an alley. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same. Like, we have more, you know... I can read you. I can read what you're doing on the floor. You're going to go to certain places on the floor that the computer won't. You're going to go up and jump up for an alley-oop at a certain point that the computer wouldn't. All of that stuff. So, like, it's just a lot better in that way. And I think it worked really well. and we had a nice alley-oop off the backboard with a reverse jam and all of that stuff that made the highlights as well. So you can check that out. That's already up on YouTube on the NLSC channel. But yeah, no, it's been a good week in gaming. And I also want to say that the mods. So you jumped on NBA 2K19 with me as well at one point, and we were playing the 88-89 season at one point, and then also the 92-93 season from still those retro mods, retro single season rosters. And just there's so much great work still being done in the community. And unfortunately, a lot of the conversation doesn't happen on the NLSC forum, so people don't see it because people are using avenues like Discord.
Yes.
Et cetera. Quick communication, updates, screenshots, sharing videos.
And, Facebook groups, and Twitter, yeah.
Sharing updates, Facebook, yeah, exactly. Facebook groups, Twitter, et cetera. So we're not seeing it as much on the forums, but there are some great projects going on. And another thing that's happening too, and we've touched on this, and how troubling it can be at times is, you know, people just releasing exclusively on Patreon for pay, as well, as opposed to posting on the NLSC, posting free content, et cetera. So there's a lot of different reasons why the community doesn't look as active on the NLSC from a modding perspective, but there are still some great mods being made, and unfortunately we're just not seeing a lot of it.
You know, I do understand to a certain extent that people want to have control over their platform, which they can do with Discord or a Facebook group or their own site, obviously. You can control your content. And certainly we have certain rules about not releasing mods, not releasing paid mods, and if you are using Patreon, there's certain rules that we put in place to be fair to the community and also comply with, avoid problems as much as possible, potential legal problems. So there are reasons why we do that, that being chief among them, and also just simple fairness. But I do want to say that our community was built on giving away mods for free, doing it for the love of modding, developing tools. Obviously, we've had Vlad developed Redditor, RedMC, and did charge for that, although that is now free for 2K10 through to 2K14. But the community was built on, we stand on the shoulders of giants, basically, of the people that built the community and released fantastic projects, or even just small updates, just great faces or jerseys or whatever, or big projects that really made the community, shared their knowledge with people, shared their tools with people, work, tools, everything, knowledge, just shared for free so that other people could continue to make mods and the cycle would continue, people would leave the community, new people would come in, learn how to mod, discover this fantastic hobby, and take it from there. And I do really encourage people to get involved in the community and to really think about, look, modding should not be a career. It can be a path to a career, like people like Leftos and Razor and Zhao Sming, and way back in the day, our founder Tim Cherner, getting the job with EA Sports. Obviously, it can lead to that, but I do think a lot of people like to mod for the wrong reasons. There's a lot of ego, always has been, but now there's also avenues to get paid on top of things. It's really made things messy, but I don't want to see that spirit of the modding community corrupted. I know that sounds very judgmental, high and mighty and whatnot, but we've done so many great things building on those principles, and yeah, I hate to see them corrupted and sort of not adhered to, because I think we're so much better. When I look back at all the work we've made over the 25 years of the NLSC that we're celebrating this year, all that we've done in those 25 years, I think there's a reason we're still around.
Yeah, and I think the goal of modding should be to not only do it because you love it, but at the same time, you want as many people as possible to be able to enjoy your mods, right? To see the artistry, to enjoy the gameplay, to, et cetera. And I think what happens is when you start charging for mods and you start putting, you put your mods behind a paywall, you don't share on, certain forums because it's against the rules. So you just kind of have it on its own site, whether it be Patreon or whatnot. I think not only the mods get less exposure, and at the same time, less people get to make memories with them. Right.
Indeed.
So that's something that I want people to keep in mind when they look to make money off of their mods. And then also ask yourself, is it worth it? What are you making off of this. You know, I've talked to a few modders that were doing ad links and everything, and they say they make pennies. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, ask if it's worth it. Ask if it's worth, you know, not allowing people to make memories with those mods and not getting as much exposure, you know, etc. Ask yourself if it's worth it. So there's a couple things to keep in mind. However, we do have a lot of great things that are going on in the community. Not as many as are we, like, we don't see all of them on the NLSC for the reasons that I just said, but there are a lot of great things happening. NBA 2K19 still does retro rosters. What a great team. I'll say it again. I see the constant updates on Discord because I'm part of the Discord, and I've worked on conversions and cyberfaces for it, for that mod, etc. But they, I believe right now they're finalizing the 94-95 season and moving on to 95-96. And I talked with Stildo recently, and I know that they're finalizing 87-88 and going backwards to 86-87, which is a special season in my opinion because it's the last season of Julius Erving. Mm-hmm. So the Philadelphia 76ers, Julius Erving, Charles Barkley, and Moses Malone team. And actually, Moses was not on that team in 86-87, so it's the last season of Julius Erving and Charles Barkley. But yeah, they've done 87. They're finishing up 87-88. They have 88-89, 89-90, 90-91, 91-92, 92-93, 93-94, and almost finished with 94-95 full seasons on 2K19. It's the closest thing that we've really had as far as single seasons go, complete single seasons, since the UBR. And yep. The URB.
2K14. Yeah.
So, right. It's super impressive as far as the attention to detail, the stadiums that Peaceman Not works on, the floors, the jerseys Peaceman Not works on, the floors, again, from Sticky Fingers and others, the Dornas. They're even doing the shoes by Micheschetti, I believe is how you pronounce it. He does the accurate shoes, like the old Reeboks and all of that stuff. You saw it because we played it.
Yeah,
you saw one of the more recent builds. Isn't it wild?
It is. And look, I've been keeping up with the thread. I don't always comment. Perhaps I should comment a bit more and offer the encouragement because they certainly deserve it. But I've also seen that Stildo has worked out how to enter the career stats from previous seasons. And look, I respect that data entry because I've made a lot of rosters where I used to do that back in the day, adding previous season stats. And that is a big job for hundreds of players to do. So I definitely tip my hat to Stildo there for doing that. And just, again, just finding out how to do that as well. We're still making discoveries in the community, and it's so important to do that and to share that resources and everything. Because, look, I understand that some people want to have exclusives and they want to keep their work to themselves, or their methods to themselves, or their formulas and whatnot. And I understand it because it does take a long time and precision and experimentation to come up with some of these things. But I do have to give Pep a shout-out here, not to get too far off the 2K19 rosters, which absolutely are amazing. But Pep has been making, for a long time now, jerseys for 2K14, and which were also compatible with 13. Great jersey maker. He was asked recently if somebody could use his jerseys as a base and give him full credit. He said, yes, absolutely, go ahead. I love to see that. We don't have a hard and fast rule about being open source. We don't force people to be open source, I should say. We do encourage it. We leave it up to the individual modder because, again, there are reasons why people may or may not want to do that. And certainly, if you've had some friction with somebody in the past, you don't want to see your work taken. And you can take big shortcuts by stealing other people's work or formulas or just copy-pasting from the rosters, for example, or just using artwork without permission. So we'll definitely ask permission and respect people's beliefs and preferences, I should say, about open source. But at the same time, if you are willing to go open source or at least let people use your assets and give you full credit to make their own projects, that's amazing, and I certainly appreciate that, and I think the community does as well. So great to see stuff like that as well. And if you do feel moved to do that, by all means do so, because it really does help out other modders.
Yeah, before I touch on that, I will say, you know, the stats thing by Stildo is fantastic, putting in the actual single season stats or career stats from the players. That's another discovery. They're also working on portraits as well. So I know that Peaceman Not is helping with that as well as Stildo, and what they're doing is they're doing full body portraits and also trying to get the face portraits in there. on the same type of thing as Pep, you know, I want to give, you know, props to Skodem, Sko, for who does the URB roster, who gave us full permission to use those portraits for BA2K19 if we can extract them. So, again, just saying, hey, here you go, use them. And that just helps everybody. So, yeah, the 2K19 thing, you know, Culture and Hornets on Fire, it's a big team. Lady Culture and Hornets on Fire working on rating signatures, all of that stuff, making sure everything's up to par in that regard. I can't talk enough about their passion for that project and what they're doing. So I hope, you know, and it's been getting some attention as well. I uploaded an NBA 2K19 gameplay video of, I want to say, Spurs versus somebody. I can't remember, and it was recently. And that game's a couple of years old, and it got a lot of views. So people are paying attention to it, and I think that's cool. As far as Pep goes, and as far as like open source, as far as giving permission and sharing all of this work, it's so underrated, and more people need to be doing that. And it just allows more people to enjoy these mods and enjoy that work and create memories with the game. So, no, absolutely. Good job for Pep, and thank you to Sko as well for doing so. Speaking of Sko, another modding thing that we can highlight, and I noticed that you put the update out for that. They continue to update NBA 2K14 and even more surprising, NBA 2K13. And they have those, you know, Sko and team, and I think Pep does work for that roster as well, etc. They have updated May 2021 rosters, which, and then obviously the single season rosters that go back to 1984-85, etc. It blows my mind that they keep updating this and get, and those older games. I mean, those games are coming up on a decade old.
That's
and
right,
they
yeah.
continue to update with new faces, new jerseys, new courts, new stadiums. 2K14 and 2K13 feel like the games that will never die, especially NBA 2K14. And the reason is because, and we talked about this on a prior podcast, I think the gameplay is just so solid for both games. They feel good. Overall, the games still look good. They hold up, etc. But yeah, you know, the fact that they can still have so many modders on board and continue to update those with updated jerseys, courts, shoes, Dornas, stadiums, all of that stuff. It's great work by them.
It is. It reminds me a lot of the last few PC releases for NBA Live, where there was still a dedicated community for probably at least 4 or 5 years afterwards that were still playing those games if they hadn't really updated for 2K yet, or they didn't like what 2K was doing. Keeping those games updated, there was definitely a community. And it's whittled down because, again, we're talking about over a decade here now. But for a few years there was still a lot of passion about that, and S. Bratt making great faces, tremendous faces for Live 08, which were also compatible with 07 and 06 and 2005 as well. So it was just fantastic to see, and we're seeing the same thing now with 2K13 and 14. Not so much 2K12, 2K11, if I can ever get these projects done. I'd love to take a shot at some of those, and also some retro season projects myself would be fantastic, because we do have some assets that we could use for those seasons already out there. You mentioned the 91-92 rosters. We do have the assets there, which... And this is another thing that I put out there, is that when people have been away from the community for 10 years, I do feel it's okay to use that work, at least the art assets, and credit them. You can reach out and try and get, if they are still around, or you can get in contact with them, definitely reach out and see if you can get permission. But at a certain point, I don't want to use the word public domain, but I feel it's kind of like that with really old projects. Like if somebody wanted to take an old project of mine and redo it that I'm not using anymore, or that was years ago, I'm fine with that, personally.
The majority of people are fine with credit. If you give credit, then it's all good. And if wherever you post it, it's a good idea to try to give credit as well, as far as like posting the content and everything. And then if somebody asks you, if they come back to the community, or somebody asks you, say, hey, listen, I don't want you using this for this project, just take it down.
Apologize and take it out. Yeah.
That's it.
Easily done.
Apologize and take it down. And that's it. It doesn't need to be that big of a deal. You mentioned faces, and I did want to touch on that. You know, for the 2K19 roster, Calvin Chan has made some great faces. They still have Cyberface Makers making new faces for 2K14, 2K13, for those mods, etc. And, you know, I've gotten more into Cyberface making recently, as you know, and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. a lot of time and a lot of work on each face, and the sheer number of faces that are created for these mods. This is why I say that the roster mods are king. Roster mods, you know, there's people that out there that can create an amazing face and people will love it and they'll put it in their game, and that's one mod, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I download them all the time. But when you download a roster mod, like a classic single season retro mod, you don't just get one face. Oftentimes you're getting hundreds of cyber faces, hundreds of conversions, etc. And it's just mind-blowing how many hours actually go into those retro projects. So I wanted to touch on those. I also wanted to touch on Thundershack's also been updating 2K20. He decided not to go to 2K21, and which makes sense because 2K20 from a gameplay perspective can be argued as better than 2K21, and the graphics are so similar that you can't even really tell the difference between the two games. So he's stuck with that, and he's been updating some of the single season rosters that he did. I believe he's been doing updates, adding a couple teams to the classic teams roster, ultimate retro base roster or whatever that he's doing. So, you know, 2K20 is still getting worked on, and that's kind of cool as well.
And we have seen less of that through the past generation. A lot of times, especially going back to NBA Live modding, or patching as we used to call it, a lot more people would seem to stick with a game for a couple of years if they really liked it. And certainly towards the end there, 07 and 08 were pretty rough, so a lot of people were sticking with 2005 and 06. And we're seeing people stick, as you said, 2K13 and 14, but there's less people. Certainly there are people who still want those 2K15, 16, 17 mods because they are such great games and they hold up quite well. But we're seeing less of that. We're seeing less of that community where there's kind of the retro 2K modding community. You have to go back that previous generation from the 2K15 to now. We're seeing less people. Not nobody, because we do see updates, and 2K18 is still getting some, and 19 obviously. But it does seem to be people have been moving on more often this generation with modding.
They really have, and I do want to say that though the NBA 2K21 section is not as alive as we saw for 2K20 or even for 2K19, in my opinion. I don't think it's very much alive, and that's a little bit disappointing. I want to give a shout-out, one more modding shout-out for this week, to RetroJack. We've talked about how important role players are and bench players for mods. He's been, you know, tackling faces like Eric Dampier for 2K21. He made Greg Buckner, John Sammons, and stuff like that. You know, how many times do we need to see a LeBron or a Kobe cyberface, right?
Exactly.
The fact that we have somebody who's a super talented modder like RetroJack jumping in and making the lesser known players for either roster filling on default rosters or for some of these retro mods that are being made, etc. Just it's so important and underrated, and it takes a certain type of love and passion for the game to go in and think about even spending the time to make players like Greg Buckner. You know what I mean? So I want to give a shout out to RetroJack for that. And obviously there's other modding stuff that's going on in the community. We'll touch base on that next week as well. But those are the main ones that I wanted to shout out this week.
The great thing about retro rosters, my last point about modding this week, is that they add that new experience to an old game or a new game. And it's great that we can play those old seasons with current technology or newer technology. Because, look, you and I, we can go back to a Live 95 or an NBA Showdown or a Live 10 or whatever, but not everybody can. And certainly those games are dated. We make no bones about that. We love them and we have nostalgia and we can indulge that nostalgia, but they are dated. So if you can make those retro seasons with the current technology, yes, there's going to be limitations if there's no audio files for the New Jersey Nets or whatever, although there should be now since there is a retro Nets team in the game. But things like that, there's no Vancouver Grizzlies, for example, in the game. So it's harder to make. There's going to be limitations with retro mods, always is. You go back to a certain point and my NBA doesn't support having less teams. My league doesn't. My NBA does on the PS5 and Xbox Series X. So there are always going to be some limitations in that respect, but we work around them. You appreciate them. It creates new memories. Something I want to put out there, and this is kind of me thinking out loud of projects that I would like to do, in addition to full retro seasons, and I think it's something that you could either build off retro season mods or use them to then create full retro season mods once you've got enough work done. But I'd love to see more what I'd call concept rosters, things like your all-time champions teams, your great games from NBA history. You know, it's actually recreating a game kind of like a Jordan Challenge or NBA's Greatest, where you actually have the two teams that match together. I mean, your Ultimate Classic Teams roster is the same kind of thing, but I'm talking about specifically having a team and an opponent. So, for example, you might create the 2004 Spurs and 2005 Spurs and 2005 Rockets, so that you can recreate the Tracy McGrady game, and maybe you juice up McGrady's ratings, or maybe you don't, you just leave it as they are, so that you can replay that 13-33. You know, whether you can set up that scenario or not is another thing. But you could set that up, and great playoff matchups through time. Just having these concept rosters that you can set up these scenarios, or concept or scenario rosters, whatever you want to call them. I'd love to see more of that. Maybe it's because I've been watching some, you know, shout out to Blue Television Gaming on YouTube there. He plays a lot of ROM hacks and so forth of Super Mario from NES and Super Nintendo and whatnot. And they've set up all these kinds of great scenarios with those ROM hacks. I'd just love to see this get really creative with some roster updates and retro rosters and concept rosters and whatnot. You could really make some great scenarios to set up. And it's something that would be great for us to play if we could make them. They do take a lot of time, just like retro season rosters. But I'd love to see it. I love those ideas.
Yeah, B-Jeff, I think his name is, he uploaded a video. He's some of my portraits, but he doesn't, like, release. He just makes videos, so I guess it was fine for... Because I noticed some of the portraits in his video, his gameplay that was like, hey, wait, these are me and my brother's portraits. But he doesn't, like, release anything. He was just doing it to show on YouTube, so I guess it's not that big of a deal. But anyway, so he uploaded a video, and he... did the 05-06 Kobe, he did the 81-point game.
Stuff like that, yeah, exactly. The
Raptors, and he had, I believe it was the same scoreboard, he was making some of the same shots, all of that stuff with Kobe in the video, the jerseys all were the same, etc. So stuff like that is really cool. I do want to point out, too, in what you said about, you know, something about updating a new game with old rosters sometimes hits the spot a little bit better. You know, what would the majority of people rather play? 91-92 roster on NBA 2K19 or Bulls versus Blazers?
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, if you're going to play the Bulls versus Blazers, even, like, say, just that matchup, what are the majority of people today, younger and older, going to want to play? Are they going to want to do it with NBA 2K19's updated graphics, mechanics, all of that stuff? Or are they going to want to do, you know, the Super NES Bulls versus Blazers?
And so, accessibility as well. Those games, plus a mod, is easier for most people to get and set up.
Right, exactly. No, agreed.
But when you talk about these single season or single games that you could recreate in rosters, all these scenarios, I mean, imagine the game where Michael Jordan's wearing number 12, for example, just focusing on weird games through history. The one game that Rasheed Wallace played for the Hawks, you know, a very limited time roster. You could do all kinds of things like that. You know, and once you've got the assets in place, you can start copying that data between rosters and reusing that data. And yeah, it's just so much fun to be had. To that point, though, I want to ask you about this philosophy before we move on. If you are making a retro season roster or a scenario roster like I had, you know, I mentioned the idea of possibly juicing Tracy McGrady's 3-point rating if you want to recreate the 13-33 game. Do you do that? Do you adjust the ratings based on the season? Like, for example, a 97 season roster, do you nerf David Robinson, or do you injure him for the season? Do you flag him as being injured? Or do you let that scenario play out, and do you give him just his regular ratings, or maybe you dropped him just a little bit? How do you handle that? How would you handle that?
If you do it right, you got to do it season specific, and you got to keep it realistic. And I think that's one of the things I do like about the NBA 2K19 retro rosters is that's what they do. As far as they, you know, have the right players on the injured list. They even give them the appropriate injury designation if it's available in the game. They adjust the ratings, all of that stuff. And if you noticed with my NBA 2K17 Ultimate Classic Teams roster, that's the same. So as outside of the injuries. But as far as, like, the ratings go, I do it to that season specific because that's how you get accuracy, that you want the teams to play correctly. And I think that's the same if you're doing an individual matchup. Like, if David Robinson is injured, but you want to do, like, one of Dominique Wilkins' best game in 96-97. You can't have David Robinson on the floor with Dominique Wilkins.
True.
For that matchup. Because that didn't happen.
Well, if it's a scenario roster, do you just leave him off the roster and just have the 12 active players from that game then? Would that be a way to do it for a concept roster then?
No, I think you put him on, you make him injured or put him inactive. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing, if it's a fantasy roster, like a what if roster, then you keep him active. So you say, well, what if David Robinson was healthy for the entire year? You know, for example, Larry Bird, okay? Larry Bird only played 6 games in the 88-89 season, right? So a what if roster would be, what if Larry Bird was healthy all season? So you make him healthy. Right.
Sure.
And you give him ratings that are more in line with the season before or the season after, in order to account for his age and what he was able to do physically at that time and how he was producing. So I think it all depends. But again, if you're doing an actual recreation of a team and, you know, trying to do an actual matchup, then all the players that actually played need to be there, and those who didn't can't. So that's the way I look at it.
For me, it's interesting because it depends whether you're doing kind of a beginning of the season, because that's just the other thing. You could have opening night or final season rosters. Final season, you get the teams as they were ultimately throughout the year. But of course, that's not realistic for opening night. You do the opening night rosters, you miss out on those important transactions that shape the season, shape the future of the NBA, as the case may be. And certainly with a situation like a Larry Bird or a David Robinson, and particularly Bird, because he did bounce back fairly well the next season, as I recall, production-wise, I think it's important not to nerf the ratings too much, because especially if you are using that roster for a multi-season play, for association, for example, or my league, because then you get to the next season and the ratings are still lowered for that injury season, but now they don't reflect what his abilities bounce back to. So I think you've got to be very careful about that as well. But these are the questions you have to ask with retro seasons and what-if projects.
You also got to decide, do you really want to spend... honestly, it could take days. Do you really want to take days of creating faces that are missing, the jerseys, the courts, all of that stuff for a team like the Atlanta Hawks, where Rasheed Wallace only played 1 game, just to recreate that one moment? See, there's things like that that you have to consider. Like, it's not as easy as just moving assets around, and you know this, but it's not as easy as just moving existing assets around. It's, if you want to make it accurate, you're going to have to do a lot of modding, and you're more than likely also going to need help from the community if you're not privy to all the different types of modding, like the jerseys, the correct court, the Dornas, all of this stuff. If you're going to actually recreate a team and recreate a matchup, you have to decide if that much work is worth it for that one game.
And
so that's another thing.
Even with a retro season roster, for example, Clint McDaniel on Sacramento Kings in 1996, do you need an accurate face in version 1.0? You can probably skip that and come back to that if somebody makes that.
Exactly. There's definitely things like that. And I've done this before because I didn't have the assets, the time, or even at the time, I wasn't that great at making faces either. You know, if you have a lookalike for the 13th man or the 12th man or something like that, and that's a guy that played like 3 minutes a game or less or anything, good. Like, do that. People are more than likely not going to notice. He may not even touch the floor. All of that stuff. So there's certain things that you have to compromise sometimes. And we have to do that still on like the 2K19 rosters that we're working on. I've had to do it a little bit, even though I have most faces in there now for my 2K17 roster. So there's definitely points of compromise.
And it's okay. People still recognize the effort. It doesn't ruin the project at all. So it's something to keep in mind that 95% of faces are done. You can do a version 1.0 at that point. But we will definitely keep up with these modding developments. Whether we devote as much time to it each and every week depends on what's going on, what we have to say about modding, obviously. But we do want to touch on that a little bit more. As we wrap up and move on to some other topics, just want to mention, obviously, we'll be playing more games of a Parsec. Probably some more NBA Live 10, but we will be branching out into other games as well. But we've got so many ideas, some Ripper ideas. So you say Wicked, I say Ripper, because I'm an Aussie. So I'm going to get some Aussie slang in there as well this week, Derek. But some Wicked ideas, some Ripper ideas, putting together some retro teams in the fantasy teams option, more things like all point guard teams, all center teams, just some wacky ideas that again, will be so much fun to explore and play with each other moving forward.
Sounds wicked awesome. No, I say
Ripper.
wicked. Yeah, that's your version of it. Wicked has been in my vocabulary since I was little. As we always say it around here in New England, etc. I think you mentioned that Jasmine, also John, he says it
Yeah,
as well.
again from the New England area,
So,
yeah.
yeah,
You
exactly.
know, it's funny, we north of Newcastle, where I am in New South Wales, and of course even that is a re referencing South Wales in Britain. I feel like the British get to places when they colonize the world, and basically, oh, this looks like somewhere in Britain. We'll just call this, this is New England. There's a New England area
Exactly.
again, north of where I live, and in fact the New England Highway is the highway going out of town. So yeah, this looks like York. This will be New York. This looks like Hampshire. This looks like South Wales. We'll call it South
Exactly.
Wales. Final history lesson. Originally, all of the east coast of Australia was originally New South Wales. It's now broken up into Queensland, New South Wales, and Victoria, of course. But yeah, so apparently, at one point, they felt the whole of eastern Australia was like South Wales. So there you go. But that's a history
And the
lesson for this
NLSC
week.
is partly sponsored by the History Channel.
Yes, right.
No, it
Yeah.
isn't.
But it could be.
But I want to bring it exactly, but it could be. I do want to bring up one final point about modding and a modding part of the podcast. We do touch on modding on this podcast. Like, we talk about the mods that we play. We talk about updates in the community, etc. But we don't want the NLSC or this podcast to be known just for modding. And unfortunately, what's happened is the NLSC, over 95% of the people know of the NLSC or visit the NLSC for one reason, for modding. But, there's all these other different aspects of the NLSC. There's, we want people to be talking about the basketball games themselves, the gameplay, the depth, recommendations for future games, constructive critiques, sharing gameplay videos, modding or otherwise, etc. This, we don't want the NLSC to be just about modding.
Yeah,
So I did
or
want to
just
make
about
that
anything. Yeah, we want encompass basketball
right.
gaming. Yeah, as a whole.
Right, as a whole. So I did want to bring that up. We will be highlighting modding projects in the community a little bit more, and we have such a talented community, and they're fantastic. But we want it to also be a little bit more than that. So.
Absolutely, well said. So one piece of news, or rather rumors, to check in on this week is the NBA 2K22 cover speculation, an apparent leak that has come through. This was reported by the official. I saw it on the official NBA 2K Reddit account, tweeted it out. So it looks like Luka Doncic is supposedly going to be the cover player, which lines up with previous leaks and rumors about him breaking a contract with EA, reportedly, and going to 2K. And the Legend Edition cover this year is apparently Dirk Nowitzki. No surprises there. I guess Dirk is perhaps the bigger surprise, but that'd be kind of cool if that's the way it goes. Derek, it's going to have a current Maverick and a legendary Maverick on the two covers if these leaks are indeed correct.
I think it's a great idea, and I mentioned that on the last podcast. I said that was the reason, before the announcement, that Doncic broke his contract with EA. The only reason why he would do that, in my opinion, is for the reason that 2K reached out to him and said, "Hey, we want to make you the cover athlete, either for the main game or for mobile." So yeah, I mean, we kind of predicted that, and that's what ended up happening. I think Dirk deserves it for the career that he had. For the fact that he stayed with one team his whole career. He got that. Had that ridiculous 2011 performance in the playoffs, arguably the greatest European player ever in the NBA. So I think that it's fitting, and I think it's a cool concept. I don't see any issues with it at all. And Doncic obviously is one of the faces of the league now, incredibly popular worldwide, and I think it fits. So
It
yeah, no issues on my end.
agreed. Makes a lot of sense from a marketing perspective. Those are some fine players to spotlight, both for the current and Legend Edition covers. One thing I do miss, and this obviously goes back to the past generation, is having something something more than just some cosmetic pre-order bonuses or My Team content or something for the cover players. I mean, it was 2K16. I think they had even a poster of Michael Jordan when I got the Legend Edition cover and some stickers and things like that, which is nice. But I also miss the in-game content. You know, even something like LeBron James, wasn't creating a legend. It was Path to Greatness. Path to Greatness in 2K14, which, an interesting idea for a mode. Of course, you had the Jordan Challenge and NBA's Greatest before that as well. I'd like to see the cover player spotlighted in some way, or at least I'd like to see some more creative modes in the game. And I think if you're going to do that, one way that you can is by having something focused on the cover player. It's an interesting idea. I wouldn't be against that, if nothing else.
Yeah, something like Dirk's Greatest Games.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Relive, depending on your licenses, Relive is 2011 playoff run. You know, stuff like that. Like, that would be really cool. And I think they have the licenses for most of those players. They still have it for Tyson Chandler, Sean Marion. He's already in the game. Jason Kidd. I believe Deshaun Stevenson's. I think they still have the rights for him. Ian Mahinmi. You know, those guys, J.J. Barea. Jason Terry, like, they could, you know, do like Dirk's Greatest Moments. And I think that would also be a great way to, like you said, spotlight that cover player. And maybe you integrate Doncic into that mode, and maybe you can get both of them in that mode.
Well, they played together.
You know, why not put, like, you know, Doncic with Dirk? Better Doncic, better than like he was, you know, when he played with Dirk, with the best version of Dirk, and put them on a team and have them run through a mode, like stuff like that. I think people would latch onto it.
I think it would be cool. Yeah. And look, you can integrate that with other modes and have it to be used to earn VC or whatever needs to happen for them to actually want to put that in there to get the suits to approve it basically and say yes, this is worth putting this in. It would be really cool to see. I think we're overdue to see a new NBA's Greatest, because obviously that focused on the legends of the 80s and the 90s, and while I'm all for those players getting spotlighted, there's a whole generation coming after them. KG, Duncan, Kobe, that you could highlight, and really, although Duncan, oh no, it was David Robinson, wasn't it, that was in the NBA's Greatest originally. It was for the 98 Spurs versus 98 Lakers was David Robinson. But yeah, Duncan, Kobe, Allen Iverson, who of course is the original cover player of 2K, so I think we're overdue for that next generation of NBA's Greatest.
In suits, tie it into VC, tie it into rewards.
Absolutely.
Tie it in somehow to maybe they'd complete that mode and they unlock a player each time. Like, I don't know, like one of your My Team players, like a Sapphire or something like that. Like, they unlock a player each time they complete the mode, right? Or multiple players each time they complete the mode. Tie it in. And make it happen, because it's a good way for people to spend more time on the game once they get sick of that online grind and those online modes. You could even make a mode like that interactive today and say, hey, play it with a friend, right? Or something like that, or put an online component to it. I wouldn't want this, but like an online requirement. Okay, you have to complete this mode with somebody online in order to, you know, to unlock this.
Online co-op, yeah. There's
a lot of different ways. Yeah, there's plenty of things that you could do. So I agree.
So we will see what comes of those rumors, but it does definitely sound like there's something to it.
Yeah, and we talked about Doncic too, and his decision to leave EA and break that contract. Ask yourself what you would do if 2K approached you in his shoes. So, like, it doesn't surprise me that he's announced as the cover player, and that's the reason why he broke the contract with EA. So, it'll be interesting to see how EA picks up the pieces and who they end up getting, because there's still a lot of players out there that people wouldn't scoff at. You know what I mean?
Trae Young, I guess. the opposite of Doncic, yeah.
Why not put Trae Young on there? Right, exactly. Somebody like that.
And with that being said, we are now at the mailbag, which we love doing each and every week. We emptied the mailbag last week, Derek, and we have a few more this week, so we want to encourage people to keep them coming, because we really love doing this segment, as we always say, because it's fun to see what's on people's mind and to give our opinion on it, and yeah, touch on some topics that maybe not come to our mind.
I love the questions that are coming in, because there's so much variety to them. You know, one week it can be about NBA Live 06. We've had people ask questions about games from the 90s. We have people talking about, you know, asking questions about the future of NBA 2K and basketball gaming. Just the wide variety has been great.
So with that being said, this week's mailbag submissions are more topic suggestions in the form of a more of a statement, but that's fine by us. We want to talk about the things that you'd like to hear us talk about. And the first one comes from the B-Ball Pundit, at B-Ball Pundit on Twitter. Shout out to you. We know that you tune in regularly and have sent us questions before. We definitely appreciate it. And all our listeners, of course. Mentions the 2K21 next-gen CGI trailer with Zion. He's been thinking about it recently, probably because the game is not up to standards, not up to his expectations, and he's kind of nitpicking it, he says, for the little stuff. And using fake gameplay in 2020 just happens to be one of his nitpicks, one of his pet peeves. And I think we both agree with that.
So I brought this up on the podcast that we recorded, actually, after the trailer was released. And I said, this is great marketing because you know the game's not going to look like this, right? And it's basically going to be, it's this big show, and then what we're going to get is not going to be like that. And that's kind of what ended up that's kind of what ended up happening. And what people got on Next Gen was a game that had very similar graphics to what we had on NBA 2K20. And I think you can agree with that, you know, from the bodies, the way the bodies look, the way the cyber faces are basically the exact same almost across the board, except for they did make some updates, but that also made it into the NBA 2K21 PC version, which is a last gen make, et cetera. And the PS4 version, et cetera. So basically what we got was this, you know, hyped, pumped up, better looking thing that didn't translate really that well to what we actually got in the game. So I completely agree. I think it's genius marketing, but it's also incredibly deceiving. You know, people did get excited about it. People got excited about the way Zion looked. They got excited about the way the rim looked, all of that stuff. And it worked.
I mean, we did say at the time, we need to take this stuff with a grain of salt, which is always what we need to do during the preview season. But this has been going on for years and generations of gaming now. The whole, I think it was Penny Arcade that coined the phrase bullshotting, or they certainly popularized the phrase. You can obviously tell the origins of that terminology for putting out the screenshots or video that show the game in a certain light that is simply BS, quite frankly, bullshotting. And we did think that might be a case. You know, we've seen CGI trailers for NBA Live, the original NBA Live 14 teasers from E3 way back in the day, 2013, when we saw those, turned out to be a CGI trailer, and we suspected that. We saw animations that were used in the previous game, so obviously some in-game assets were used for that first teaser trailer for Next Gen, but it was showing things that we did not expect to see. I mean, look, you can say anybody expecting that got their hopes up, but I mean, we do want to get our hopes up to a certain extent. We do want to be excited for the games. And certainly, it does feel very false to do that in 2020. I absolutely agree with Ball Pundit on that one. And it's disappointing, especially because they were really hyping up Built from the Ground Up. And I do believe there are elements in 2K21 Next Gen, PS5, Xbox Series X, that are built from the ground up, or they're certainly new, because there is a different feel compared to the current gen version or prior gen version, whatever you want to say. But there are also so many legacy issues in that game. We don't see reviewers talking about that. We don't see a lot of influencers talking about that. They're talking about how it's a new game and how they're really parroting that built from the ground up. And if it was built from the ground up, unfortunately, they used the same blueprints, because there are issues in there that go back to 2K11, quite frankly. So
The thing is that they know that the majority of their sales are going to come in the first couple of weeks of their game's release.
Yeah, pre-orders, right?
Pre-orders. There's going to be pre-orders, and then in the first couple of weeks of the game's release. That's when the large majority of all their sales are made. That's why the Zion trailer is so effective. I call it genius marketing, but not in a compliment way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to compliment them totally for that. But yeah, agreed. You know, they talked about Built from the Ground Up, and of course that's what all the paid reviewers and shills basically put in their reviews. They don't mention the legacy issues, the being able to just run by the computer and score, the poor transition defense, help defense, the wide open lanes down the hoop, to the hoop. All of this stuff, you know, the warped dribbling, the skating that still exists, the lack of, you know, the canned animations, all of that stuff. So, like, it doesn't mention all of that stuff. And like you said, it doesn't mention how it looks like it's the same blueprint and it's very similar to games like 2K20 and 2K21 for PS4. And that's just unfortunate. And again, that's why it's so hard to win the information and influence war, because how do you beat those reviewers that have all of that stuff promoted, right? How do you beat the reviewers who get millions of impressions on their reviews, or even at minimum hundreds of thousands impressions? So, yeah, it's unfortunate. It really is taking advantage of people. And I think that's why he's upset about it, because he feels like, you know, he asks this question because I believe he feels that he and other gamers were taken advantage of.
Rightfully so. Understandably so, to feel that way. I think we all feel that way to a certain extent, even those of us that approached it with a certain amount of skepticism and even cynicism. And it really does suck to see those reviews just praising the game blindly and not touching on the legacy issues. And some people might say, oh, well, they're legacy issues, we expect to see them. But no, the point is that they're still there. That is a knock against the game. That is not a you don't give them a pass, but although they do. And that's what's frustrating.
That's not built from the ground up, right? That's not built from the ground up. You want to build it from the ground up. You don't have a dozen or more legacy issues that were in past games.
You can't say it's built from the ground up when it's, or at least again, saying that it's built from the ground up with the same blueprints, the same design. Flaws and concepts.
It's marketing. It's like same thing in the dev blog where they said, you know, we haven't been able to achieve proper foot planning on PS4 because the technology didn't allow it, which is a lie. They put that in the 2K21 blog, and you and I talked about it. We've been playing these games recently. The foot planning on 2K17, 2K16, 2K, and 2K15 are better than what's in 2K21 next gen.
Absolutely.
You can stop on a dime better. You're not skating all over the place. All of that stuff. So, again, it's lying and marketing and taking advantage. It's false marketing, and it's taking advantage of people. And I think that's where his comment is coming from. Yes, Mike Wang, because I believe it was his dev blog. Yes, you were able to achieve proper foot planning on last gen. Not only were you able to achieve it, it was better than what you have right now on next gen. So it's not really fair, let's put it that way.
It's not. And look, we can blame the influencers and the reviewers, and we certainly should, and hold them accountable. I've always wanted to, or long wanted to, do an article on Monday Tip Off where I just list all the legacy issues that aren't mentioned in reviews, and I believe that list would be quite long. That's going to be quite a lengthy article if I ever get around to doing such a thing. And look, that's, we should hold them accountable for that. But the unfortunate thing is that a lot of gamers will just let it slide and say, oh, well, it's what you get with 2K, which I understand if you're enjoying the game, which I've been playing a fair bit of 2K21 this year, so it's not like I haven't had any enjoyment with it at all, but I also don't deny the issues. And that is the problem when gamers deny the issues and they resort to the old thought-terminating cliches, get good, adjust, you just suck at the game, go play NBA Live. It's disheartening when we do it to ourselves. And we shouldn't do it to ourselves, especially when there are some influencers and reviewers, paid reviewers, shills, whatever you want to call them, one and the same. When they're doing it, don't turn on your fellow gamer. We say this a lot on the podcast, to stand up for your fellow basketball gamer, because the suits won't stand up for us, the shills won't stand up for us, so we need to let our voices be heard and stand up for each other and support each other. Even if you don't play a mode, recognize that there are issues with other modes, and don't downplay or try and silence criticism, constructive criticism.
It's a robotic way to act and a robotic way to think.
Yeah,
that's just basically is the way it is. You know, NBA 2K19, the last thing I'll say about this before we move on to the next question, NBA 2K19, one of the biggest problems with 2K19 is how you drop the ball constantly. Like, any hint of contact with another player, you're just dropping the ball, right? It killed the face-up game. You're just, you know, you try to drive to the hole and the ball just drops out of your hands. All of this stuff, it creates for some wild action, and it's a major gameplay flaw in NBA 2K19. Guess how many reviews mention that?
I'd guess close to zero, if not zero.
Zero. I scoured, because we were talking about this too, I believe, at the time, you know, on the forums and whatnot. I scoured all the reviews that I could find, basically, on NBA 2K19. I did not see one review bring it up. I did not see one review bring up the ball dropping issue, how it happens constantly. Now, why would they not bring that up?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. And that's what's frustrating about it. So like you said, as a gamer on the ground floor who's not a paid shill, don't be robotic. Don't just go with the flow, all of that stuff. You need to make yourself heard.
And look, hopefully we do start seeing some of these improvements and those real next-gen advances on this generation, because it did feel that we didn't get that jump. And people say, oh, it's the first game of the generation. But as we said before, so was 2K14 on PS4 and X1. And that was a big jump. And yes, we are getting to that point where we're seeing less of a jump, because we're already dealing with some pretty good tech from the last generation. But even so, I think the big thing this generation is those legacy issues, seeing the strings, seeing those canned moments, eliminating those. And of course, the big test moving forward is, as always, and I know we harp on it a lot, but it's important, is the approach to recurrent revenue. How they do that this generation is really going to shape this generation. It shaped the last generation, especially as it got more and more greedy over time. Not just 2K, of course, so we're not just saying it's just 2K that's doing it. So many people are. EA, obviously, although not so much in NBA Live, but they probably would if NBA Live was better received. Let's not delude ourselves on that. But that will definitely shape this generation, their approach to microtransactions and recurrent revenue mechanics.
One thing that I've definitely appreciated, and obviously I agree with that, and we've talked about that so many times before. One thing I've really appreciated with NBA Live 10 is the lack of canned animations. Because I feel like when we're dribbling and we're driving and whatnot, we have control, right? Like if we want to go to the hoop, we're not caught in a slow motion side by side. Or if we try to finish at the hoop, we're not put into these animations where we're on the opposite side of the hoop we intended to be in. You know what I mean?
Even on passing, it works. Even on passing.
If you go up for a layup, I'm not going to be dragged from the opposite block to block you.
No.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's one thing that I've actually enjoyed more about NBA Live 10 than, say, like, NBA 2K21 or even NBA Live 19 is the fact that I feel like I'm not – I feel like I'm playing, right? Like, I feel like I have more control. So it is crazy.
That's the funny thing is that, obviously, Live 10 has its canned moments, because that is just the way to make a game that doesn't have true – loose ball physics, true ball physics in there, but it feels less fake, it feels less phony. So a game from two generations ago, although it obviously shows its age in other respects, it feels less fake than a current game, and that's something I feel that they're less they're not doing as good of a job of hiding the strings, hiding the under the hood mechanics, so that we are seeing those getting sucked in animations and those phony moments. 2K21 has a lot of those, and both 2K and Live, a couple of generations ago, were less phony, and even though they were definitely designed the same way, you can see some canned moments there, but it still has a much better feel, and that's something they need to get back to. And look, that will help the online scene as well, so it's not just us old heads complaining about offline gameplay. This is gameplay across the board.
Right, let's go back 6 years even. Let's go back to, like, 2K15. There's not as many canned moments in that game. You picked it up recently. You're like, wow, this is fun. The foot planning is unbelievable in 2K15. It's amazing. The foot planning is awesome. But you also don't have as many canned moments going to the hoop, driving to the hoop, rebounding the ball, all of that stuff. So, like, 2K15 also is better than next gen as far as from a foot planning perspective and a canned animations perspective. So, again, folks, not everything gets better over time.
Exactly. So our second question this week comes from G Movla on Instagram. Shout out to you. We appreciate the question. It says, I always wondered why does NBA Live have the license of the TD Garden and Madison Square Garden, and 2K has all of the arena names except those two. I believe that EA Sports has worked out exclusive deals with those arenas. Over time, there's always been games that have missed the licensing of some of the arenas, and they've had to call them Boston Celtics Arena or New York Knicks Arena or things like that. It's just whatever they've been able to work out with the original licenses, the sponsors of the arenas that have the naming rights. So we have seen it over the years. I do believe that EA does have the exclusive right to those names, just as 2K has the exclusive rights to Michael Jordan and some other legends that they have. So there are some licensing deals in that regard. But it is funny to see that, Derek, over the years that that some of the arena names have not been licensed, or they've been licensed in one game but not the other.
It is interesting. You wonder what's going on behind the scenes. Luckily, with things like the TD Garden and whatnot, we have modders who jump on it week one for us on PC. But that's where court customization and offline mode would really come in handy. You know, for roster makers, if they brought in that MyNBA customization, brought that into just regular roster making, right? I think that would be huge if people could jump in and correct these things and make their own Boston Celtics court with TD Garden on the baseline, all of that stuff. So, you know, we're lucky to be on PC where we have modders and everything, but it'd be nice to bring that capability to, you know, people on console. And
it would, yeah. The ops.
Yeah, as far as licensing goes, it is interesting that TD Garden is not allowed, has not allowed 2K to use them. And, you know, again, we'll never know what goes on behind the scenes unless somebody comes out and speaks out, which is incredibly rare, like Barkley did. Why he wasn't in the game, like he actually spoke out on it.
Yep.
And he goes, hey, listen, you know, money needs to be donated to these retired players. If they give us a couple million or whatnot, then that's something that, you know, you can put me in the game. And obviously they haven't flinched or budged on that, and that's why Barkley's still not in it, other than his rare appearance in NBA 2K17 to be on the Dream Team. But I don't know. I just wish that more people on console were given the flexibility that we have on PC.
Definitely.
As far as,
definitely,
you know, being able to get that court in there and those players, etc.
And there's obviously the NBA probably doesn't want to have too much access to do that because it would interfere with the licensing or lack thereof of certain players and certain brands and what and licenses and sponsors, I should say. But it is interesting that the arena names and sponsorships are not part of the whole licensing package, that they have to make some arrangements there as well, or certainly it seems to be the case. As far as Charles Barkley goes, I'm surprised. Well, surprised is not the right word, because I'm not surprised. I'm certainly disappointed, dismayed that 2K hasn't taken him up on that offer. Obviously, the game makes a ton of money, as Barkley himself has said. They could easily afford to make that donation to the Retired Players Association. It would certainly be a show of goodwill, considering how much money they make off using those players with souped-up My Team cards and whatnot to sell, to make money off those and their likenesses. So to be able to pay them or their families if they've passed away, it's something that they should do. And again, Charles Barkley's not asking for money himself. I get the feeling he'd appear without any compensation for himself. It's about looking after the veterans that came before him that don't have that, didn't make the money that he did. And obviously he still makes money from being an analyst on TNT and made quite a bit during his career as well, one would imagine, through sponsorships, endorsements, and of course the NBA salary. But that wasn't the case for those earlier generations, and he's looking out for them. And hats off to Charles Barkley for sticking to his guns on that one. But yeah, it's just disappointing that 2K is not taking him up on that offer, because that is a very generous offer, and also it's a very it would only be appropriate to do that as well. So it's dismaying, not surprising really when you think about it, but very dismaying and disappointing that they're not doing that. It's the least they could do.
Yeah, there'll always be licensing issues and whatnot, but that's obviously one that gets the most attention, and part of the reason is it almost sounds like greed from 2K. You know, look at what the NCAA did for so long, taking advantage, making billions of dollars over time on the players that didn't really get a cent. You know what I mean?
Indeed.
You know, marketing those players, using them on advertisements, all of this stuff, on commercials at times, all of that stuff. And why? Because the NCAA is a big business, right? And they're going to do whatever they can to make a profit. So it sounds like that could be part of the case here. NBA 2K is a big business. They have over 10 million players every year now, you know, between consoles, PC, all of that stuff. And they're really big. They're very recognized. It's a business. So their business decision in this case is Barkley worth it? You know, no. And, you know, the other thing, too, when you think about it, is they're still trying to push all those people to those paying modes, you know, the My Team and online play and all of that stuff. And where does Barkley fit in there? I mean, he fits into My Team, but is that going to deter, you know, is how many more people are they going to grab by getting Charles Barkley in My Team? So from a business perspective, from a bottom line perspective, that's what probably matters the most to NBA 2K, and Charles Barkley doesn't fit in.
And to bring up a point that Jim Sterling has brought up in their videos on many occasions, the money that's made from microtransactions does not go to the hardworking developers. It doesn't go to assets that would help develop the development of the games. They don't go to servers or really covering the cost of the games. A lot of the profits from these recurrent revenue mechanics go into the pockets of the suits. So it's not a case of people saying, oh, video games are expensive to make, which they admittedly are. But these profits are not necessarily going back into the games. Often they're not. They are going into bonuses for the executives. So we're lining their pockets. When you are spending money on my team or any VC for my career, it's not going to the developers or anything like that. It's going to the suits. You're lining their pockets.
Big picture-wise, when you really think about it, it's super frustrating, to be honest.
It really is.
And people want to say, well, it's a yearly release. It's only $60. Do you have any idea how much people are spending on these modes? It's not just $60. It's not just $70. It's not just the $100 bundle that they get, to get a better start. People are spending a lot more money than you think. And it comes down to greed, and it's very unfortunate.
I mean, with that money, they could possibly work at a licensing deal with TD Garden, Madison Square Garden, but they don't.
Yeah. Or even get a Rasheed Wallace Atlanta Hawks team in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at least having him on the Pistons and the Blazers would help.
Right, exactly. He's not even there, so it's just kind of unfortunate because those teams feel empty.
I was going to say, it's the same. Yeah.
When they have 485 76ers for years without Barkley. It's like, okay. And then one year, that I believe they had to try to get him in there and Moses wasn't there. So, it's not a good look, and it makes using those teams not fun when you're missing key guys.
They're very conspicuous by their absence, absolutely. And I'd rather have those teams in there than not, because you do get some assets, logos, jerseys, the players that they include. But those teams that they've added, I do appreciate that they have added those teams, like the 2000 Blazers and the 2004 Pistons, but when they are missing a couple of players, and I think as of 2K21, I think even Tayshaun Prince is missing from the 2004 team.
I believe he might be, yeah.
So
yeah, look, there's actually quite a few players.
It's gotten that way where a few players are missing. Ginobili was missing at one point. I think he's back in the game, though, isn't he? Ginobili and Bosch.
Yeah, but there's rosters, too. Like, the 06-07 Warriors in the game are bare bones. There's, like, six players for the 06-07 Warriors, and that's a relatively recent team.
Yeah.
There's quite a few teams that are missing a lot of players.
And it does, after a while. They're not as fun to play with.
They're not. I can't get into it. That's why I have to mod them.
Which fortunately we have, but again, it would be nice for them to be out of the box. And we can talk about, obviously, the ratings being wrong and animations being wrong, and that's a big issue as well. But simply just having the players in there is a big deal. And the more players, the more copy and paste placeholders on the bench, all wearing headbands, in some cases, looking identical clones on the bench, it's just a bad look. And we've said it before. It's saying, oh, well, look, we've got all these retro teams, but when they're half-assed,
Right, exactly. And they are half-assed, too. As far as we've already talked about the ratings, tendencies, copy-paste jobs, botch signatures, all of that stuff. So we talked about that on previous episodes, and it just makes the whole experience blah. And I told you about the difference in gameplay from using, like, the current teams, which are mostly up-to-date and oftentimes more accurate. You know, when you play with those teams and then you try to go and play with retro teams, the retro teams are just running in the mud. The signatures are completely out of place. The players aren't playing like themselves, all of that stuff. It's just a wildly different experience, and it's super disappointing, the disrespect.
Maybe we need to play some more 2K21 co-op and highlight some of these issues.
Yeah, we could. We could absolutely do that. I'd be up for it, even just to highlight those issues. Maybe we can have a little bit of fun in the meantime, but if we're using the default rosters with retro teams, I doubt we'll be having that much fun.
But we can make a point, and we can feel smug about it, which is almost as good, being the being the egotistical jerkwads that we are. But
History Channel just pulled their advertising for us.
We needed to talk more about Ancient Aliens, perhaps, and... did Wilt Chamberlain build the pyramids? Who knows? But stay tuned.
You need a good thumbnail for that.
Yeah, looking thoughtful, or the thoughtful emoji. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you for the questions and topic suggestions this week. We love doing the mailbag. It is a very fun segment for us to do, to dive into some topics that's on your mind.
No, absolutely. Keep asking us questions every week. We definitely want to fill up the mailbag. And I love, like I said, the variety of the questions and topic suggestions are key. And we appreciate it.
Podcast at nba-live.com is where you can email any topic suggestions and questions. You can also post them in the NLSC forum, which is forums.nba-live.com. You can also submit them via our social media, which we'll be promoting shortly. And yeah, any way you can get in touch with us, send them in. But yes, that has brought us to the end of episode number 378 of the NLSC podcast. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. The show comes out every Sunday, of course, on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com. It's also on all the major podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, to name just a few. On those platforms, search for NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. And of course, feel free to leave us a review, hopefully a positive one, on Apple Podcasts. And as we wrap up here, Derek, where can we find you on socials, and any final words for our great listeners?
Definitely. So again, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to submit your top 10 plays to me or to Andrew or on the NLSC channel as well, because we'd love to see, you know, what you're doing in basketball gaming. And yeah, like we said, let your voices heard. Talk about your NBA 2K22 wishes, your NBA Live 22 wishes, if we're going to get one, etc. So definitely speak up. And let's see what we can do together as a community. Tune into Holding Court with D for Three. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, CLNS Media, etc. I'm on Twitter at D4384 and my gaming channel at D43G. I'm on Instagram at D4384, the NLSC D43, and we've been more active on YouTube lately. You can tune into my YouTube channel, D43.
You won't believe our opinions on Holding Court. It's not clickbait if it's verbal, right? If I say it, it's not clickbait.
Right, right, exactly. And you're not wrong either. They won't believe it, because it kind of goes away from, so it's not lying technically, because, you know, what we are talking about kind of goes against what, you know, you hear in the media every day and all the people that parrot the media. So I do enjoy recording those episodes. So we need to get to episode 17.
As I said at the top of the show, I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. Our YouTube, where, as Derek said, we have been more active as of late, is NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that is all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.